My friend Bart, who has faced the fear of the unknown all of his life, says it best. Be fearless. I can't say it enough. Be fearless. I think I was always insecure, and I finally learned that fear is false evidence appearing as real. In the past few years, Bart has taken up bungee jumping and parasailing in beautiful, exotic places. He's always dreamed of traveling. He grasps the concept of no day but today, that famous lyric from the musical Rent, like no one I have ever met. He says it helps him conquer fear in everyday life. Fear, he says, is just another emotion that I can use to create and survive. I am fully aware that this is easier said than done. None of us are alone in the journey into the unknown. Everyone who has gone before us has paved a way and prepared a place for those yet to board the train. The acceptance or rejection of what's next is up to each individual. The paths we take are singular and precious. We each get to take a place of understanding in our own time, and I personally lean on the advice of those in the afterlife to help us better understand what's to come. But for you and I, here and now, this beautiful world is here for us to feel alive in, and anything we can do to connect deeper to it should be a priority. Living in the moment, embracing each day, saying what needs to be said now and not waiting, saying, I love you to those who matter. All of the things that aren't too late for us to accomplish. We are not promised tomorrow, but we are here today. Fight those fears and push beyond your own spiritual constraints. Jump. The end. The beginning. Hello, my ghosties, my ghoulies, and my moth people. Welcome to Noctivagant, the show about the strange, paranormal, otherworldly, and the people who write books about it. My name is Rory, and I am joined by a fright of specters in Jay, Nick, Nicole, and Noel.
Whoa.
Hello.
Is that actually what's called a fright of specters?
Well, it's like a fright of ghosts or something.
Yeah. I like it. It's cool.
Yeah. I just chose specters to be different. But on this show, we are going to discuss, dissect, and review the best and worst in the world of paranormal and conspiracy literature. So settle in, buckle up, and prepare for a walk on the midnight roads of Noctivagant. We're back.
We are.
Yes.
In the blue room.
The blue room. Is that what we're calling it now?
I don't know. It's blue and it's a room, so that works for me.
We could just call it the studio.
No.
Yeah, that's good.
I don't know. Feels too literal. Blue room feels more metaphoric.
Oh.
Except, I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm just babbling words.
Have you completely lost it? And we've only just started part two.
Oh, I lost it months ago. Like, I have been circling the drain, buddy.
This is what happens when we move out. We were your sanity.
This is your brain on high strangeness.
All right. Well, welcome to part two of Goodbye, Hello by Adam Berry. How is everybody doing this fine day?
I'm doing just all right. I got my favorite comfy jacket on. These chairs are more comfortable than the wooden kitchen chair I used to sit in. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty good. I'm good. My bones are all together, and I don't own any hamsters. So my life's doing pretty well.
Good.
That's great. You're on the right track.
Yeah.
You're on the right track.
I think the only thing that could make this setup more comfortable is if Murphy was hanging out in here with us. Mm. But Murphy is enjoying the extra space under the new bed and doesn't intend to emerge anytime soon.
It's true. He does like that he fits perfectly under the new bed. Like, he can just walk right under it. He loves it.
He keeps dragging my clothes under there.
Yeah.
And then he won't give them back when I reach in to try and retrieve them. He like smacks my hand with his little paw and just tries to not let me take my clothes back.
He wants them.
He's nothing. Yeah, he's making a nest.
Yeah, you just got to accept it. Give up what he takes.
That's funny. Well, anyway, well, welcome back to the show again. If you couldn't tell, the Quite Unusual Podcast has decided yet again to join us for part two of this book.
Hello.
Hey.
Which, you know, I mean, good on you guys. You are putting up with a lot of us talking to you.
That's true.
And that's a tall order.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I gag myself because I'm just sick of hearing it.
We're having a great time.
We learned a lot about hamsters today.
We own hamsters. Yes. It's been a cautionary tale.
Specifically what not to do.
If I could end my life and I will be remembered as a cautionary tale, you know what? I'll take that.
Yeah. Know this. You will be a cautionary tale in any story I write about my life.
Oh, that's sad and good, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we're here to talk about Hello, Goodbye, the second half of it.
Yeah.
Where things get, I don't know, I thought the second half of the book was, I don't know, I felt like the first half was a lot of setup, getting into how he came about to host the show, where his initial thoughts of Paranormal started, and then the second half gets more into, I don't know, the exploration of grief as it pertains to paranormal experience. I thought that was a very interesting perspective to take.
Especially when we get into part three, obviously, part three of the book. Because it's in three parts. Part three of the book really dives heavily into the grief side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I agree. I think at this point in the book, we've taken a turn for. There's still going to be stories about investigations and things that he's done on it, because that's where he gets a lot of the experience from. But he does spend a lot more time on other things as well, like going into the theories as to why these things might be happening or what could be happening because of it. So, yeah.
Yeah. I thought I liked the second half of the book more than the first. First half of the book was very close to Amy Bruni's book. I felt like I was reading the same book. But then he goes off in his own direction, and I appreciated it.
Yeah, I liked how he brought in, some of his paranormal friends, too, with John Tenney and the Newkirks.
It is always, though, so funny whenever a book brings up John Tenney's stuff, because the three of us have now seen so many Tenney lectures that it's like, I know this one. I've heard this before.
Yeah, it's sometimes it's hard to remember. Did I read this in his book, or is this was this in a Tenney lecture or on What's Up Weirdo, you know?
Yeah, the podcast, too. I mean, love a Tenney story, though.
Oh, obviously. Yeah.
I can do them over and over again.
Yeah, I dream of the day that I'm part of a Tenney story. I just want to be like that. That's the thing, right? That's the goal. That's when you know you've made it.
I mean, there's always an easy way to become part of anyone's story. Just do something very memorable and traumatic to them.
Like bring 74 hamsters or something.
I was thinking like dress up as Sasquatch and assault them in a parking lot, but yeah, that works.
That is worse. I don't know. I think I'm going to have to go with the hamsters on that one. Hamsters.
Can you imagine waking up in the morning, like going, like everything's normal, and you go down to your living room and there is like a cage, a city of hamster cages with 74 hamsters, like that were just gifted to you in the night by the hamster fairies?
That is a nightmare I never knew existed until this moment. Yeah. And now it is my biggest fear.
I never knew I had that fear, but after recording this podcast, I now have that fear. Yes.
Good. Thank you. I'm glad that I've caused some damage. That's my goal in life.
As a horror writer, Nick, I am sure you are thrilled to know that you've caused new nightmares for people.
Yeah, except for it is a little disturbing that my life experiences seem to have that effect better than anything I imagine.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they say. That's what you think.
That's true. It's true. I do occasionally hear about the flesh squid. Messes with some people who read that piece.
Yeah.
All right.
So are we ready to jump in?
Absolutely.
Let's do it.
All right. Part four. It's all about perspective. What is a ghost? That is probably the hardest to answer and one of the most common questions that Adam hears. To him, ghosts are energy. Sometimes the energy is residual, like an echo of events long past, like memories brought to life, or the energy can be intelligent, with its own thoughts and desires. In basic terms, a ghost is someone who is no longer living, but who once inhabited human form and can somehow still interact with the living world. This idea drives Adam's core philosophy, that ghosts are just people. More complicated are the questions as to how and why they stayed behind. There are many theories on the topic, but he likes to focus on those that come from the spirit themselves. Most of the time, it boils down to some fundamental desire for love, interaction, recognition, or other basic desires. Most common is the proverbial unfinished business. This seems to be most common in cases of sudden death, when the deceased did not have time to do what they wanted with their life. Often, this business has to do with their family. They want to remain to watch over loved ones or to mend relationships. Sometimes ghosts stay behind for family that is still alive. Sometimes it's because they themselves can't let go, or maybe that they're too afraid of being forgotten, or simply that they, like the doctor, don't want to go. Sometimes it's harder to determine why a ghost stayed behind, but it could likely be from a trauma. One example of this is when they investigated the Fee House in Little Rock, Arkansas. The Fee family was known for scandal, including affairs with servants, bastard children, and at least one horrific death when Grandma Mamie caught fire and burned badly. She tried to keep it secret as to not ruin a family wedding that day, and ended up dying of her burns.
I can't even imagine. Imagine going to your wedding, and there's your grandma in the front, and you don't know that, like, she is skinless under that dress. And just dying in front of you, but she didn't want to be rude.
Yeah. I mean, that's very, very old world energy there. Big old world
like,
energy.
Would you think the wedding wouldn't be ruined in retrospect once people figured that out?
It wasn't relevant at the time.
Oh.
Less than a year later, Mamie's daughter, Catherine, drank poison on the staircase while her husband and brothers watched. The official story is that she mixed up the poison with headache medication. Those stories from her daughter, Patricia, indicate that she drank it during an argument, seemingly as a test of her faith in God to save her. When new owners moved in a century later, they noticed activity immediately. They saw a shadow figure moving about and a female apparition standing behind them in the mirrors. Amy and Adam employed the Estes method, which we have discussed previously in detail, but in a nutshell, it is listening to a spirit box while wearing a blindfold and noise-canceling headphones so as to be sensory-deprived. This will allow you to enter into a trance-like state to communicate with the spirit or allow the spirit to communicate to them. Adam believes that there is a strong psychic element in the Estes method. Sometimes the words are there. Sometimes the recipient hears them because the static has placed them into a meditative mindset in which they are more open to hear the spirits. Often the words aren't anything that he hears, just something that he feels compelled to say in the moment. Sometimes this includes an emotional overlay, during which he reports feeling the prominent emotions of the resident spirits. And on rare occasion, he has even received visuals. During this session, they made contact with Catherine, who relayed that the poison was very painful, and she indicated that she had intended to drink the acid. From their session, they gathered that Patricia's story was true. She drank it intentionally, and the family covered it up. Later, they found that Mamie was also coming through via EVP. She felt sorry for her daughter and didn't seem to be with Catherine in the afterlife, which was strange. Two spirits in one home, but apparently not in the same place as each other, and they even had a shadow figure appear on their footage in Mamie's room. Adam and Amy decided to try and do what they could to connect these two spirits. They moved to an in-between spot between the two locations where the haunting seemed to be centered. And then they initiated two different Estes method sessions. The goal seemed to be to try and get the two spirits to talk to each other through Adam and Amy. During this conversation, neither Adam nor Amy had any idea if the words that they were hearing and relaying were an actual conversation or if it was just gibberish. What they had was a full-on conversation that implied that Mamie was in heaven and that she believed that Catherine's suicide was a sin and that she deserved to be in the situation, but interestingly, was aware of what Catherine did, despite having died first. By providing this communication, they connected two ghosts who couldn't otherwise talk. The activity calmed after that. And they don't know if Catherine is still stuck there, but they hope that they brought her at least a little bit of peace. Quote, believe it or not, we have a role in the hauntings we find in our homes. And not all of the activity is caused by ghosts. Sometimes our minds can run wild and play tricks on us, especially when we are frightened or anxious. End quote. Once the thought that your home may be haunted enters your head, everything becomes suspect. You begin to hyperfixate on things that you would normally ignore. Part of their job as investigators is to educate their clients on how their own energy, their intentions, can impact the haunting and their ability to deal with it. Key to this is helping them humanize the haunt and reduce their fear of it. In some instances, the ghost may just be reacting. What if, for example, they don't know or accept that they are dead? To them, the new owners may just be squatters invading their sacred space. To Adam, it is just as important to understand the human client's reasoning for wanting the investigation as it is to find out why the ghost is acting up. In one case, the ghost was acting out because he didn't like the changes that the new owners were making to the home. He didn't understand that they were renovating. He thought that they were just destroying the house that he had worked so hard to build. And with that, we're going to move into discussion question number 4.
Yay!
So time is weird. We experience time in a liminal nature, but there are some that are not convinced that it is liminal. That being said, how is it that two ghosts are in the same spot, yet are unable to communicate? Do you think that there was something preventing the communication? Were they on different wavelengths? Were they in different times? What do you think?
So I had mentioned last episode, and we were talking about what we think the like afterlife is. Mm-hmm. And I brought up my personal theory of the different like dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they are on different planes completely. Mm-hmm. I mean, if one of them is saying that they're in heaven, maybe, you know, she is in heaven and she's on a different plane that whatever heaven looks like to her. And then the other one is somewhere else.
Yeah.
So maybe they're not physically in the same spot. We just can't comprehend that.
Well, it's because, right. Like, thinking about, like, what we were talking about in the last episode, right? Like, if her heaven, Mima's heaven, wouldn't include Catherine because she believed that the suicide is a sin, then she wouldn't be there.
Right. They're in the same place. They can't perceive each other because the fundamental belief system wouldn't allow them to perceive each other.
Right.
Because, well, my daughter must be in hell, so I can't see her or hear her.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was leaning towards, because in my interpretation, being a ghost where you're stuck in a location or connected to an object and you're quote unquote haunting it, that to me feels like a psychological condition, that there is something that there is something unresolved in your psyche that is preventing you from moving on from that location. And it kind of reminds me of the idea of when somebody is so depressed and so angry and traumatized that even good productive advice given to them is not penetrating, it's not clicking, because their brain is just not in a condition to where they can process it and hear it. And I think it can be like that with ghosts, where if part of the thing that is keeping you trapped in that cycle of haunting something is an intense feeling of loneliness and abandonment and being unloved, the psychology of what you're going through may prevent you from interacting with any other disembodied spirits that might be hanging around, because your disembodied psyche literally cannot perceive that there is help and assistance at hand.
Right. I mean, so kind of building on that. All right. So we've talked about, this is something that's come up on the show, the idea of mentation, you know, what we were talking about last episode, how your perception creates reality, right? Except for, here's the thing, is that If I, in my perception, say Jay isn't real, there's still a Jay here that I can touch, that other people could physically push my head to look at. There's the raw matter that represents the idea of Jay. And so that's undeniable. It's right here. However, what if once you're dead and you've kind of loosed yourself from that binary of physical versus spiritual, whatever, you are now in a state of pure mentation. You are a thought. What if in that state, the whole idea that your perception creates your reality is even more true, in that because you're no longer you no longer have to contend with the physical reminders of something's existence. You just have you're dealing entirely in a world of conception of thought. And so I, you know, again, like we were saying earlier, my daughter killed herself. She must be in hell. So even though we're in the same place, what if that means she literally cannot see her, cannot perceive her, because her reality will not allow it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What she sees is heaven. Her daughter wouldn't be allowed. So then she's just not going to see her.
Right. The only other thought I had, and this is kind of something that Adam brings up in the book, so I wanted to touch on it, is this whole idea that ghosts, what if ghosts aren't haunting a place, but are, it's more like their areas of reception, in that, so, I mean, this goes into idealist philosophy, which I know there are huge gaping holes in you could drive a truck through, but it's an interesting framework to think through. So if this world is thought, everything is the physical manifestation of internal thought, you know, as above, so below, that kind of relationship. Well, what if upon death, you know, we become aware of the fact that because everything is thought, there is no difference between here and there. There is no such thing as space or time. It's all one unified field of existence, of consciousness. That's that whole idea of the stack universe we're talking about, where each time is occurring, all time is occurring right now at this moment. What if it's their area, haunted houses, what those are areas where someone, because of your personal connection to it, it almost acts like as an antenna for your specific shard of consciousness, in that you can manifest your consciousness within that zone of reception because of your emotional attachment to it, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean, if two people are broadcasting to the same location, that doesn't mean that they're broadcasting from the same location. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So it could be a sort of situation of there are simply two radio signals going to the same place. But that doesn't mean the jockeys know each other.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. They're just riding different radio stations.
Yeah. One's on AM, one's on FM.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I had a very similar thought when I was just thinking about the question in general, because it's like almost as if, like, if I was in my afterlife and you were in your afterlife, and for whatever reason they didn't include each other, we both were trying to reach out to our old house, you know,
yeah,
then maybe something like this could be happening, because ultimately, you know, like, it's almost like in a way our world, the living world, is the hub of all of these other pockets of the afterlife, right? We're the centerpiece that holds everything on. I don't necessarily want to say holds it together, but we're the thing that binds it together, right? That's the one commonality everybody has, regardless of their afterlife choices, is here, is the living world.
And that's interesting, because it's almost an inversion of Platonic philosophy. Because Platonic philosophy, this world is the projection. It is the manifestation, kind of the hardening of the light of creation at the furthest edge that it can reach. And so, like, at the furthest edge of the light spectrum that is coming from whatever is God, creation, the universe, whatever, that is where you get physical matter coalescing. Your idea there is almost an inversion of it, in that physical matter is like a solid core to the planet, and the afterlife is the surface where we're radiating upward and outward.
I would say less in the realm of the physical world so much as just this world, physical or not, whatever this is. I was thinking more along the lines of, like, this is mid-world to whatever, another leg of the tower, or something like that. But, or like this, you know, whatever Earth is, realm one, and then everybody's afterlife, potentially, whatever it might be, is realm two.
Right.
you know, but the commonality is realm one. And so that's the binding of everything else.
Well, I mean, and it's interesting because you that idea is so in line with so many beliefs in ancient cultures. I'm thinking specifically Jewish Kabbalah, the ladders of ascension, the golden pillars, all these various metaphors to basically mean you are moving through various realms on your way to something.
Yeah. And that's guaranteedly where a lot of that idea sparks from in me is the idea of this is, you know, one...
Because we're marinated in this 24-7.
Yeah. One leg of the journey and into the next leg, trying to climb the seals, so to speak, depending on which path you want to look at. I'm not going to be following John Dee's, but that's okay. We can move on.
No one should follow John Dee's in the modern age. It was his philosophy was fine for the time he lived. Sorry, we went on a diatribe there. Any other thoughts?
No. I think we're all correct, or none of us are correct, and this is a simulation.
What a bold yet controversial statement. Everyone's right. The
Everybody's right or everybody's wrong. It's one or the other.
It's got to be one.
Nope, only Paul is right.
All right, ready for part five?
To be clear, that was the royal Paul, not any individual Paul.
Part five. The royal Paul.
The royal Paul. There's only one.
Part five. To cross or not to cross? It shouldn't be a question. Quote, crossing over is a hotly debated topic in the paranormal community. Some believe that we, as living beings, can help guide spirits to the other side and to find the light. When I was first diving deep into the paranormal, I associated crossing over with a broader idea rather than an action. End quote. Adam thought of crossing over as connecting to spirits or other metaphysical forces in a direct psychic manner. The psychic could cross over the boundary of death to initiate meaningful dialogue. Adam has always thought the idea of forcing a ghost to move on or cross over to be very strange, especially in situations where it is done without the spirit's consent. Quote, I believe in the power of intention and that people can use their intentions to manifest spiritual outcomes. If they truly believe they're crossing a ghost over, by all means, I can't take that away from them. But I personally don't believe it's possible to force a spirit to cross over, end quote. And to be honest, it's pretty rude to try and force someone out of where they are living without even talking to them first. Just because you're alive and they are dead doesn't mean that you know what's best for them. Instead, Adam believes that we should treat ghosts with the same respect, understanding, and empathy as any living person. The facts are that we don't know what the ghosts know. We don't know that the communication we are doing is working the way that we think it is. What we do know is that when we communicate with these ghosts, a lot of times they cross over of their own volition. Death is hard for the living and for the dead, so I can only imagine how hard it must be for a ghost that has stayed behind. Let's try not to make it even harder on them by being an asshole, all right? All right. One way that we as the living can sometimes be connected to death is in near-death experiences, something that is not unfamiliar to the veteran Noctivian listener. Dr. Parnia of the Critical Care and Resuscitation Research at NYU Langone Health has written about NDEs and their impact on the brain. We know that the brain, for the most part, stops working upon death, but some electrical activity continues for a short time. Specifically, it's the activity associated with the conscious experiences. According to Dr. Parnia, the areas of the brain that activate on death seem to be areas that are normally active during day-to-day life. As we die, those responsibilities are set aside. According to him, he believes this frees up the brain to instead allow for the perception of another layer of reality, one that we would not normally have access to. In death, we harness areas of the brain that are normally inaccessible. It is not that the brain is generating a hallucination. It is enabling access to aspects of reality in one's own consciousness. So, what if this is how the journey into death begins, with our brain moving into a new operation mode and facilitating our transfer into the next world? Adam, during an investigation at Liberty Hall in Union, New Jersey, decided to try an interesting experiment that would potentially help facilitate a similar connection. No, he did not try to force an NDE. That would be insane. Greg Newkirk has designed a ritual involving the ingestion of special honey harvested by bees in a large English cemetery. You are supposed to eat the honey, then meditate on death. The honey is meant to help bring you closer to the dead. Adam ate the honey, then meditated, seeking a spiritual place of mind. In the parlor, he sat down, asking his guardian spirits to step aside as he dove in. He focused on the origin of the honey, visualized it infusing into his body. He was covered in a burial shroud and held onto a statue of Anubis as he meditated. They also placed coins over his eyes to bribe the ferryman and was told that he would remove the shroud once he felt the connection, symbolizing his rebirth into the spirit world. He managed to fall into a deep meditative state, focusing on communication with the dead and all the frustrations that come with it. He realized that as often as he is frustrated while asking the questions, the dead struggle even more to respond. He got the urge to scream out, to get anyone's attention any way that he could. He felt intense isolation and a sense that he had been forgotten. This longing, he believes, is what drives otherwise peaceful spirits to scratch the living. They are desperate for connection, to be heard, to be acknowledged. One of the spirits, in fact, did reach out and told him that the heaviness and isolation that he felt is what they felt. And Adam rose from his false grave, looking drained and exhausted and feeling the residue of death clinging to him still. And he still feels this connection to this very moment and tries to reach meditative or spiritual mindsets to aid in every investigation because of it. Real or not, we won't know. But, quote, if we are all connected and everything is everything all at once, and there is no doubt in my mind as living human beings, we can tap into the spiritual place and create deeper connections with the afterlife, end quote. And that will bring us to discussion question number 5.
Whoop, whoop.
So when performing a ritual like this, where you are attempting to experience and connect with the dead on like a more personal level, it seems like it could be pretty intense. So do you think that there is risk to attempting something like this? And do you think that spirits could take advantage of the living in this vulnerable state?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Honestly, what I was thinking of while I was reading this section of the book is I was thinking of the idea that in certain temples, in certain Zen Buddhist temples, obviously enlightenment is the end goal, but sometimes monks are trying to reach enlightenment or trying to get themselves to a spiritual stage where they are not ready for it. And whatever they experience in those moments of deeply intense meditation can at times, instead of enlightening, become deeply overwhelming or actively traumatic because they were not actually at a point where they were ready to do that. If you look into the actual traditions of how one enters Zen monkhood, the reason it's so intensive and difficult to even get into the temple is because you need to be ready for it, because if you're not, it's going to really, really hurt you. And that's kind of what I was thinking of here, of like, this ritual sounds really intense and might, in my opinion, be one of those rituals where you need to make sure you're in the right headspace. You need to make sure you're with people you trust. You need to make sure that you have some way of essentially tapping out early if you need to, of like, because Adam was going through it when he was trying to do this ritual. And like, he was like, it was upsetting to me because I was listening to the audiobook, and like, it was upsetting to me listening to him talk about this. And part of me was sitting there going like, dude, I like not, I don't want to like mansplain his own experiences to him, but part of me is like, if I was your friend at that moment, I might have advised him to pull out sooner than he did.
Because he was under for a long time too. I remember that episode of Kindred Spirits too. Like it was intense.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I think malevolent presences could absolutely take advantage of vulnerable people in that moment. Yeah. And I think that just my general advice for anyone who wants to do kind of intense spiritual work like this is you should go slow. And especially in the beginning, when you're learning your own limits, if you start to feel uncomfortable or overwhelmed, it's okay to back out and try again when you're in a better headspace. Like that doesn't make you weak or cowardly or anything like that. It's okay to work up to more intense experiences, because if you try to force your way through when your brain and your heart are giving you signals that you need to stop, you might end up further away from the goal you're trying to reach. Because again, some of these monks in these intense meditative practices, they don't make progress when they push themselves before they're ready. They do the opposite. They end up needing to start over at an earlier point because they've essentially traumatized themselves, to put it in Western terms.
Yeah. Even Aleister Crowley took him 2 or 3 tries to do his crazy big ritual the first time. Not that Crowley is somebody that we want to aspire to be, but
I don't know. I've sometimes thought about running a cult in a shit-filled house.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's the one I won't join.
Oh, you'll join. You're not going to have a choice.
Fair enough.
That's what the shock collar's for.
Ah, I see. It's one of those cults.
Yeah, yeah.
Normal people just call that kidnapping.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's why those cops are so mad at me.
Yeah.
Problematic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think when you open yourself up, though, to anything paranormal, like you're clearly opening a door and anything can come through. Like that can be, I mean, that could be the spirit of like loved ones who have passed, or it could be a malevolent like energy too. And also this like ritual that they did, I'm surprised that like he didn't get any attachments or anything, you know?
Yeah,
like
me too.
Something latching on.
Absolutely. Reading it was like giving me anxiety when he was saying he was just hoping that someone would come check on him over and over and over. I wish someone had, and like it almost seems like he wished he had been pulled out earlier and
sooner. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was giving me a lot of anxiety. And then when he heard someone walk into the room, but everyone insists that no one had entered the room, I mean, that could have been a malevolent spirit. And what if they chose to take advantage of him?
Right. You know, especially in that moment, because when somebody came in, it was like right after he had that first wave of him wanting to get out. And that would have been prime opportunity for something if it had, you know, if it wasn't a decent spirit in any way, to just be like, oh, look at this. Look at this little asshole over here trying to get in. Like, you know, and it would have been super easy, like you said, to end up with like an attachment or something like that. Like, it seems like prime, you become prime real estate for what is the term that they use in Skinwalker?
A hitchhiker?
Yeah. There you go. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, I think I agree with everything everyone said here. I think one thing that I found myself thinking about is I do agree that, yeah, you're probably at putting yourself at risk, but I'm not necessarily sure. This is just not sure that the risk is likely to come from the dead themselves. And the reason I say that is that in all the years of reading this, and I could be wrong, it could be a whole bunch I'm missing, I've only ever found one story where a ghost killed someone, and that's the Bell Witch haunting. And the only times I've come across stories of like any of like the big horror movie things you'd expect, like of human ghost possessing a body, for example, every case I found of that, I don't like the source. I don't trust the source.
There's the medium early as one of the, like we read in
On the Fielding.
No, it was, one of the, it was either, it wasn't Occult America, but either way, it was one of the books where they were talking about like histories of mediums and the like. And there was the one medium that somebody pulled him out of the session and he was ruined.
Yeah.
For years.
Oh, absolutely. I what I'm saying is I think the danger is likely more subtle than horror movie logic. I think that the day, well, and another thing I was thinking about, what dangers could there be? And that went back to the whole idea of, okay, when you're dead, you exist as thought, as mentation, as energy that we can't detect, whatever. We think that we're all operating on that theoretical basis. Well, what if the danger is not really that, oh, I'm going to come take your body? It's, well, I have this misery in me, and because I am a living thought, I can see that misery as a piece of myself. What's to say I can't just say, well, I'm tired of feeling, I'm going to take it off and put it in you while you're open? And that you could almost cause psychological issues because the dead are leaving pieces in you that they don't want anymore, or stuff like that. I also do wonder if the danger, I mean, if you go folkloric, the danger wouldn't even necessarily come from the dead. It'd come from the guardians of that barrier. Because, I mean, almost every culture, go back, there are guardians of the dead, entities that exist to keep that veil whole. What if this is a great way to get their attention? Now, that's not even saying that they're real, but, you know, again, we're operating on hypotheticals here. I think that, yes, there's dangers. I'm not convinced that the ghosts are the most likely source of that danger. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I don't disagree with that. And I personally, I think with any ritual, even one that you do with a positive mindset that's just for you, comes with risks, right? When you do any kind of magical work, I believe that it comes with risk because, like you said, when you're doing that, it's with intention. You're opening yourself up to the other side. You don't necessarily know what might be there,
right? And you're raising up a bunch of energy. What is that energy? How is that? Could that energy be used by other things? And does you raising it draw their attention?
Yeah, no, and I absolutely have no, like, there's no, I have no disagreement. You won't find a disagreement with me there. I think that that is, I think that that's very true. But I also, I guess I wonder, like, how much because we hear the horror stories, we watch the horror movies, how much that interferes with our perception while doing the ritual and allows for those negative things to happen.
Right. It's kind of like if you're tripping, like if you're in a bad mindset and you're tripping, too, yeah. Like you're going to have a bad trip. Yep. So it's like kind of the same sort of thinking.
Well, what if, so again, going back to that, the theme of the last couple episodes of perception equals reality. What if once someone is a ghost, there's no longer the physical gross matter to kind of reinforce the identity of who they are? What if they become, and I know this is something I brought up on the show previous times, but I'm circling back to it. What if they become sort of warped mirrors in the sense that I am the ghost of Jeff. Jeff was an okay guy. He lived a fine life. But when I encounter somebody who has all of these horror movies in their head, these horror stories, and this idea of ghosts as these foul, manipulative, evil things, what if them perceiving me as that, because I no longer have physical matter to back up my identity, what if them perceiving me as that actually makes me act more in line with their perception because I am now just an entity of thought or something like that? I mean, that what if that's also possible, that if you go into the ritual fearing what you're encountering, it will become something to be feared?
Right. I think that makes a lot of sense, and I think that we as alive humans do that to other alive humans as well.
Like
I'm acting like I'm in a bad mood and I'm around Nicole, she's going to get into a bad mood.
Yeah, like projecting your feelings and
stuff.
It's
like you pick up that energy. So that would make perfect sense that a spirit would sort of do that. And, you know, you pick up little pieces of everything that you encounter as human beings. So for sure you would do that when you were a spirit as well.
Yeah, I mean, if I every day went on social media is blasting out that Rory is like a fascist sympathizer and a violent, vile abuser, eventually they're going to hit me with their car.
I would. Probably wouldn't even take that long.
Day one.
You call me a fascist one time, I'm hitting you with my car.
Good to know.
What I would do.
What that means is I always have the Kia escape hatch ready to go if I need to leave this reality.
Yeah, that's true. Well, maybe I'll run you down with the bike just for fun.
I mean, you're going to get fucked up in that, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, in this situation, I'm going to jail for murder one way or the other.
Listen, the three of us and Kelsey have had an unspoken suicide pact for a long time. So, like, if we need to go out together, we'll make it happen.
One way or the other. Good to know.
Darker than baby rates.
Is it, though?
I don't know.
Will you guys just give in and get the cyanide capsules that I've been suggesting since Christmas of 2016?
Cyanide's a terrible way to die. No,
it's
never.
It's quick and effective.
It's quick and agonizing.
Okay, fine. Yeah. Fine. We'll drift off peacefully in our sleep like boring people.
I'm never getting I'm never getting a house with an attached garage because of you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a quick way to quietly kill a whole family. You leave a car running in the garage, leave the door open.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Were you just singing Baby Raids?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to turn this into a musical, actually. 74 Hamsters, the musical.
It's all about the Baby Raids. That's the tagline.
I'll be there. Wherever it opens, I'll be there. Front row.
Inspired by true events.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can go dig up a couple of their skulls so they can see it too.
No.
I'm just picturing that time that orchestra was performing actual Cannibal Shia LaBeouf live. Yeah. And then at the end, it just pans to the audience and the only one there is Shia LaBeouf in the front row in a tuxedo, slow clapping. Like, that's what I'm picturing with Nick and the 74 Hamsters musical.
It's just me and a horde of hamster ghosts floating around me.
That is hilarious and the best thing Shia LaBeouf ever did.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Agreed. It is.
Yeah. Agreed. So on that note, are we ready for the final part?
I think we better be. I'm feeling the madness overtaking me personally.
No kidding.
Really? Present tense? That's how you want to, that's what you want to use?
Part 6, communication or grief? To Adam, the most beautiful description of death comes from Hamlet. Quote, to die, to sleep. To sleep, perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil must give us pause. End quote. Many NDE experiencers report that their experience was dreamlike. Quote, dreaming is so powerful, especially when connecting to your higher mind or to a different phase of existence. In that place we go while sleeping, we have access to a different level of thoughts, memories, and emotions. Some experiences feel so real, we wake up with the residue of the emotions we felt and carry those into our waking days. End quote. And in history, there is a long list of civilizations and cultures that compare death to dreams, including Australia, the South Pacific, Africa, China, India, Egypt, and Greece. They all share a belief that when we sleep, part of ourselves travels to other realities for wisdom. Death is the final release of that part of the self from the physical body into the never-ending dream. And what if our dreams aren't just symbolic, as some think they are? But what if they are a way for spirits to communicate? When one dreams about a loved one that passed, maybe that is them visiting you in an attempt to give you comfort or help you heal. Or what if the dreams aren't even meant fully for you? Instead, what if these dreams are meant to be closure for the one that passed on? Whatever they are, if they help you or the spirit and they don't harm us, I say bring them on. And death comes in many forms, and all of them come with a weight of grief that the living must carry for the rest of their life. For those of us that choose to be pet parents, that means that we have the privilege of bearing the weight for our fur babies, all of them, since odds are we will outlive all of our pets. Adam joined the ranks of us that have lost one of our precious fur babies in October 2022. He and his husband's Chihuahua Maria passed after a long and happy life. They were on a trip to Salem, Massachusetts, when her health took a downward turn, and they had to take her to the emergency vet, where they had to say their goodbyes. As they held her, Ben had a vision. He saw her next to them, looking as she had as a young dog. She was jumping up and down on her back feet. It was like seeing a ghost, but it was also what he needed right then. It felt as if she was telling him that she was okay. Even as an experienced investigator, Adam is not immune to grief. It is natural. It's healthy. And because of his experiences, he knows how hard it is to communicate with them after they have passed. He never tries to reach out to those that he's lost for this reason. He doesn't want to force the interactions. Instead, he takes it as a sign that they're in a good place and at peace if he doesn't hear from them. And even if we do get communication via dreams, medium, tarot, or otherwise, it's important to remember that these communications are temporary. It won't last forever, and it's not a get-out-of-jail-free card for your grief. And if you do try to reach out and you get nothing, if you continue to try, it will only exacerbate your grief. Adam, of all people, knows how affirming it can be to have a paranormal experience in relation to the loss of a loved one. Be it spontaneous or medium-induced, it is validation that nobody is ever really gone, that there is a continuation of consciousness after death. Quote, "For most human beings, the idea of death is terrifying, and losing people we love is devastating. But death is a fact of our existence. It's going to happen to everyone. And I think the first step in coping with that harsh reality is to acknowledge that we have no choice but to accept it, live with it, and move forward the best we can." End quote. We are on a journey, one that leads to another journey. In a sense, we are paving the road to our afterlife at all times. And for Adam, that path is him seeking out ghosts to help them and learn from them. We're not alone in our fear and grief. Even if we have nobody in our life, we walk on paths long tread by countless people over the ages. What we experience, how we interpret that experience, and even our thoughts on death will continue to evolve and change as we evolve and change. Spirit communication is ultimately about fostering connections and relationships. If you want to talk to someone who has passed, just do it. Talk, meditate, pray, whatever you need to do. Ask them for help, for advice, for a sign. Celebrate their life and honor them as best you can. Because we cannot escape grief. What we can do is ease each other's burdens by sharing our experiences and connecting with the living world around us. In its own way, this is honoring and respecting the dead. We learn from them, and we let those lessons guide us to a better understanding of our own journey. And when we do reach out, let's take better care to not just yell and ask the same old questions. Let's take a step back and listen. And with that, we'll move into our final discussion question.
Okay.
So we have reached the final discussion question, and as we are all animal lovers, I want this question to be in that realm. Obviously, in paranormal television, books, etc., the ghosts of people are always the focus. So, why do we not see ghosts of our pets very often, if at all? Do you think that their afterlife experience is shared with ours, or is it something separate?
It has to be shared with ours. Come on. I don't believe anything other than that.
Right, that's the thing. It's like my gut is screaming, no, no, I'm going to see them all again, and it will be fine. Even if it means the moment I get to the afterlife, I will get some very just vengeance for a bunch of pissed off hamsters. The fact of the matter is, like, it's really hard for me to accept the losses that I've had in life. And I mean, yes, it's both people and animals. But we're talking specifically about animals right now. It's really tough for me to think about them without thinking about that I'll see them again. You know what I mean? Like, and that could just be my own bias, my own trauma from the hamsters. But I have to hope that there is more, that there's always more for not just me, for everyone. And that includes these beings we share our lives with. Because, I mean, this is definitely true in the modern day. The current generation and our attitudes towards our pets is very different from our parents' generation and those before. And it's becoming, I don't know, because I feel like there's a greater awareness of the fact that this is another living thing with its own wants, desires, its own it exists for itself. It doesn't need another purpose beyond that, just like any person. And the idea that we're bringing that person into our life saying, I'm going to care for you, I don't know, that connection feels like it's getting a lot more attention, a lot more weight in our generation as opposed to others. And I feel like that is definitely going to contribute to me saying, no, I'm going to see them again.
I will say one caveat on that is, or at least from my perception, the caveat to that, to it being just our generation, is I'll say it is a lot more common amongst everybody in our generation, whereas in the queer community, this has been a thing forever.
Okay, fair. And as the one person in this, among the hosts of this show that is not queer, I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, that's why I said I'd put that one caveat on there only because I can.
Yeah.
Also, things like this go in cycles. I mean, anyone who's done even a cursory study of ancient Egyptian culture knows how they felt about their pets, particularly their cats.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like King Tut had, I think Tut is one of the ones where it's in he had multiple mummified house cats with him that had names and were very clearly deeply loved by him and his wife. And yeah, and I honestly, with animals, I don't know why their ghosts are so much less common, other than it might just be the way that they interact with their own mortality and their own continued existence after their physical life ends is just different than ours. Or
good point.
Yeah. And I think it might be that they just legitimately feel less need to come back, because honestly, my childhood dog Baxter, the only real like visitation I ever felt like I had from him was in the last few days before Buffy was put to sleep, because I at least once, possibly a couple of other times, I felt our bed dip at night, like a large dog was climbing onto the bed with us, and I would feel the weight of him. Like I felt like it was him. I recognized his shape and his weight and his movements, laying down with me as if he was attempting to comfort Buffy with me, because before we got her the Traz, she was in so much.
Yeah, she was in pain. Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's like the entire, he passed away now like 10 years ago. And the only visitation that I had with him was in like a moment where like not only me, but my other dog needed him. And that just, they may just feel a lot less need to come back, or animals likely die with much fewer regrets than we do. And it just might not be something that they find beneficial to us or to them, especially because like dogs hate seeing their people in pain. I imagine that for a dog coming back and visiting their people when their people are in the throes of grief for them is probably a deeply painful experience, and one they would rather avoid.
I could definitely see that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's weird though, because the only apparitions that I've ever seen have been of my pets. Like I've never seen a ghost or a human apparition, but I have seen them of my pets. And I used to see them all the time when I was younger, but it would be like more so like a residual. So like my one cat would always lay on the radiator, like in this one spot. And I would just look over and I would see him and kind of like do a double take. And then I would look again and he'd be gone. So like, I think it was more so like a, like what Nick was saying about like the energy, like the broadcast, it was kind of just like a broadcast of, I mean, his energy.
Like an right.
Imprint almost. Yeah. Well, kind of. Yeah.
And it makes me also wonder what if it's not that they don't linger, but that we could easily see that and say, well, it's an echo. It's like, you know, that's where he always was. So it's kind of imprinted on the universe. Just as another possible way of looking at it, what if to them, when they die, many of them become ghosts, but they don't change anything about what they're doing. So they're just still hanging out and living like they always have. And they don't feel a need to get our attention. they're fine. Yeah. Like in the sense of where a human ghost, I don't know, maybe it's almost a sense they have a better understanding of their condition than human ghosts do. A human ghost is all tied up in all these societal and religious expectations about death and the afterlife that we've constructed. An animal could be largely a blank slate. It's not that big of a deal to them.
Yeah, it's just natural.
Well, I mean, I say that with the full understanding that, of course, still they do grieve. They have their own grief and all that. I mean, my dog Teddy, when Buffy passed recently, he went through a very noticeable period of grief. So of course they do have some understanding of what's happening. I'm not saying they're completely blind to it, but maybe for those who have passed, there's just not much of a difference. They're not upset. They understand, and there's no reason for them to be making noise and rattling chains when they can just go and hang out next to you. And yeah, you might not know it, but they do, and that's enough for them.
Yeah.
At least that's a very hopeful thought I have.
Yeah, I like that. Very nice.
I think something that's kind of been sitting in my brain, I was reading a fiction book. And inside, I was reading a book of short stories called Arcanum Unbound by Brandon Sanderson, which is a bunch of short stories inside his greater universe of the Cosmere. And in one of those stories, it's the main character, one of the main characters from the Mistborn series, after he has died. So it is Kelsier has died. He's in this realm in between the eternal and the world of the living. It's a cognitive realm. But in there, when he's in the cognitive realm, you see when the ghosts, you know, the spirits of people would pass on, and that time that it takes in that world was dependent on like how much essentially of that magic you had in you, plus other factors that don't matter to why I'm bringing this up. But there are some that they hit, you know, they die, they go to the cognitive realm, they meet God, and God's like, cool, and then they're gone just like that. So I wonder, like, thinking about it, what if, like, with animals, there is no gap in between for them to meet God? They just go straight to eternity because they know, like you said, on an instinctual level, they know what's next. They don't need to be warned. Mm-hmm. They don't need to meet God prior to this because they know on the other side is going to be where we are, or where they, you know, where their heaven equivalent is. And of course, I will, of course, always be on the side of it's going to be shared, because if we go back to what we were talking about before, regardless, in my heaven, my animals will be there, you know? Yeah. So I can only imagine that in theirs, I'm there.
You know, and it also goes back to this, you know, we've talked about this, I don't remember if this, this episode or the last one, the whole idea of time potentially not being real, right? That the linear time is not a thing, because, I mean, there is some really compelling evidence coming out in our most theoretical physics, which points that direction. You know, the Nobel Prize winner for last year proved that reality isn't locally real. That's ridiculous. But anyway, in that, and this is just really a nice image that I like to hold on to, is, yeah, what if they do die and they go immediately to the afterlife? And yeah, maybe they do have to pop back in to check on us here, but the rest of the time, they're still with us, because if all moments are already happening, we're all already dead and in the afterlife while we're also here, while we have not been born yet. And so for that reason, yeah, they're already there with us. And why would they continue to go hang around here when they can go there where we can manifest tuna with our minds?
Yeah, right.
Or go to a dog park that never ends. Yeah, you know, it's possible that there is no separation for them, that grief really is for the living. Because, I mean, how many times have we heard about NDEs where you get there and all your loved ones are there already? And I've heard many where I got there, my loved ones were there, including people that hadn't died yet. If that's the case, then dying, there's no grief at all. I mean, unless you are one of these people who can't, like the ghosts, a lot of them, remember, they linger and then they feel that isolation. What if that's because they're afraid of going on? They'll never get to that revelation that they never have to be alone again. And so they get, it's almost, in that situation almost sounds like hell. You know, if you think about, all right, let's look at the typical Christian conception of hell, right? It is the absence of God. right? That's what I've heard. It is the feeling of the absence of God. At least that's what I've heard theologians tell me. So what if what hell is what ghosts are in right now? Because God is the collective whole. And so by isolating themselves, by lingering, they enter hell. And that is kind of where we get our formation of where our hell realms and our mythology come from, is that feeling of absolute aloneness.
I mean, it would, in a way, it makes sense.
Yeah, it's clear, I'm not arguing for a literal hell. I don't think that's a thing.
I think if, well,
yeah, I don't.
There's a lot that you have to unpack with the history of hell.
Yeah, I know.
You know, but beyond going down that rabbit hole, if I was to make an argument for any kind of iteration of our lives being hell, I would say it's where we're living now.
Well, I mean, that's very Gnostic. That goes back to Gnostic Christianity, is that this is hell and that we are trapped here.
Well, yes, I don't necessarily believe that we're trapped here. I think that the idea of, like, if I was going to go along that framework, it would be more along the lines of this is hell and we're just journeying to climb the ladder to get out.
Yeah, I apparently need to climb faster.
Don't we all?
If you've ever worked retail in your life, you know that this is hell. So
that is, yeah, that is definitely hell.
Yeah,
for sure.
Retail or food.
Fast food is awful.
Yeah, it's hell. Fast food is definitely
complete
hell.
With boiling pits.
Yeah.
So I have a story about a ghost dog.
Okay.
So I think that, I don't remember who amongst us said it, that there's no regrets with animals. Like, they're just so pure. Like, they just pass right on. But my dad tells a story about a dog that he had when he was young, a German Shepherd called Missy. And every night she would walk down the hallway and check on, like, all of the kids and, like, make sure, like, they were in their rooms, whatever. And then she'd lay at the end of the hallway and you could hear her, like, little nails, like, click-clacking on the hardwood.
Mm-hmm.
And he said after he passed, he heard her every single night until, like, all of them were older. And then I grew up in the house he grew up in. And when we were all young, he heard her again. And then once we grew up, she disappeared. So part of me wonders, like, if an animal has, like, a job to do, you know, like, that was
like protecting the kids.
Yeah.
Like,
that was, like, her job to her.
Yeah.
I wonder if they come back and they complete that job. And once the job's been completed, they're ready to go because they're no longer needed in a way. But, yeah. We also have a ghost cat here, so there's a side note on that.
Yeah, so, that
story is not only beautiful, but it reminds me of something we were talking about around when Buffy passed away, of the idea of her decline happened when Rory and I were living on our own. We were getting ready to, like, pay off a bunch of our debt we had. And it's just, like, it was this idea of we'd gotten to a new stage in our life where we were stable and we were happier and healthier. And it was almost like she tried to stay for us as long as she thought we needed her. And when her job with helping us grow up in that sense was done, she got to retire and go be an old lady somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so especially with dogs, I can see that.
Well, and also, I mean, she had just finished, quote unquote, finished helping raise Teddy.
Yeah.
Because Teddy was kind of the last baby she was going to get. And he had just reached technically adulthood.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then she went out. It was like, okay, I have replaced myself. There's a new dog around.
Mm-hmm. And Teddy's picked up that mantle and taken it very seriously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but, he has.
No, I, you know, Jay and I talk about this quite a lot, actually. You know, the idea of our innate connection to animals, it's literally in our DNA at this point. Like, literally, there is a DNA connection to being a human and loving dogs specifically.
Yeah.
You know,
we evolved concurrently.
Yes. Like it's literally it's there. You could, you know, I think we were talking about this yesterday. You could be somebody that actively dislikes dogs, but then sees that terrible dog commercial that everybody makes jokes about, mm-hmm. and you will feel empathy.
Yep.
Even if you hate dogs, because it is in our DNA to love these creatures, right? And so I refuse to accept that there is an afterlife without dogs. I refuse to accept that that they're not waiting for me, on the other side of the rainbow bridge, whatever it might be, because like prior to Buffy, I'd never lived long term with a dog. I'd never had a big emotional connection with dogs. I knew I liked them, and that I wanted one. And then I've said this to Jay, and I think I've said it on the show before, but there was a moment when Buffy like laid on me and was just like gazing at me. And I had like an actual realization. I was like, this is a creature with a soul. Like I can actively see this inside how she's gazing at me. And it like foundationally changed me. Just seeing that. So it's like I can't ever accept that there would be a place without for me afterwards without her and without any of the animals that I have now and will have in the future, because I love them too much to accept that.
Yeah.
I will not believe that there is not a heaven where I can't see all of my animals who have passed. I just won't believe that. Sorry.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, sometimes I do wonder, you know, if reincarnation's a thing, if people end up having like the same cat over and over again over the course of their life, like maybe that's what that happens. But that said, I mean, that can happen and they can be in the afterlife if time isn't real.
Yeah.
True.
Every iteration is happening at once, including the one where they stopped.
Yeah.
Also, they might not always come back as animals. I'm not completely unconvinced that Buffy hasn't like just straight up been my mom in previous lives.
I'm not convinced, Jay, that you're not a cat that I had in a previous life.
I mean, some elements of our dynamic feel like Nick, I will silently hand you things that I am not strong enough to open, and without even looking at me, you will take the bottle or whatever and just open it and hand it back to me.
Yeah, or when you can't reach something, why my innate instinctual instinct is to not grab it for you off the high shelf,
pick you
up so you can get it.
Oh, did you ever own a cheetah in a past life? Because then it was definitely Jay.
I mean, I really hope I did. I hope I owned a cheetah in a last life, even though in terms of modern ecological responsibility, wildly irresponsible.
I'm going to make a very irresponsible statement. If you are going to keep any type of wildcat in your house, a cheetah is the only one where you have any chance of making that work long term.
Yeah, anxiety helps you with that, as in the cheetah's anxiety.
They're also chill to the point where they are capable of bonding with humans. Mm-hmm. Like they have done that. Like they wouldn't be happy in a suburban house, but they are capable of getting along with humans.
I mean, tigers have technically bonded with humans.
Can you imagine the panic if you brought a cheetah to a dog park?
Panic, the police.
Yeah.
Like the whole nine yards.
Okay. Did we beat that question to death?
I mean, I know we talked about a lot of sad things.
Yeah, I'm pretty suddenly feeling very raw.
I'm sorry, but you know, I had to put in a question about animals, and even though it's very raw.
Well, and what I find interesting is that universally, throughout the whole show, every question, a lot of time we brought up other theories we've read, kind of other ideas and trying to build upon them. And when it comes to this question, all five of us basically immediately went, nope, gut reaction, not intellectualizing it. They're there and I will not entertain anything else.
Yep.
Which probably should tell us something about our bias, but I refuse to analyze it.
It brings me comfort and hurts no one. Where's the downside?
Yep.
We are correct. Everything else we're like, it could be possible or it could not be possible. Uh-huh. Both are right and wrong. And this one we're like, no, it's
Yep.
Absolute line in the sand right there. Absolute.
I'm glad we all found it together, that not one of us wasn't like the asshole and be like, they don't have souls. And then we all stop being friends with that guy. It'd be really awkward.
Yeah. Would have ended the Zoom call. Nope. <You're right>.
Collaboration done.
All right.
I think that's it, though. I think we've come to the end of this book.
All right. Well, then the only there's only two things left on the agenda, and the first one is the about the author.
Oh, right. I actually have to read something.
Yeah, you have a job to do, sir.
I'm not just supposed to be here and make dick jokes.
And hamster joke.
Yeah. So Adam Berry is the executive producer and star of Kindred Spirits. Duh. He grew up in a haunted house, and after a formative paranormal experience in the Gettysburg Battleground, he later founded his own paranormal research team alongside his husband, Ben, in Provincetown, Massachusetts. He is a graduate of the Boston Conservatory, and he currently splits his time between living in Provincetown and New York City. He has also appeared in a number of other paranormal television programs, including Reunion in Hell, Haunted Salem Live, Resurrected, Paranormal Lockdown, Expedition Unknown, Search for the Afterlife, Ghost Hunters, Ghost Hunters Academy, Pickler and Ben, and The Anderson Cooper Show. He also tours extensively, lecturing and guesting at paranormal conferences, conventions, and theaters across the country. He's also acted in a number of other programs, including Myrrh, A Story of Me, two episodes of The Point Society, and Carla Jean and the Mushroom Heads. When not ghost hunting or acting, he is the executive director of the Peregrine Theater Ensemble, a nonprofit theater company in Provincetown, an educational summer theater program focused on nurturing young actors in a highly professional environment. He also sits on the board of directors for Tim's Fund, a nonprofit scholarship program created to support social activists who change the world via their art. And he has a deep love for chihuahuas, which is what I could find on internet about him. At least the things that were grounded. I found a lot of weird comments about him.
Well, don't believe any of that shit.
I won't. I never believe anything I get off Reddit.
Yeah, well, yeah, you shouldn't. Like, ever.
No. It's a cesspool that I desperately hope one day stops working, and I'll be the last user on it.
Speaking of Reddit lying to us, when we first brought Hopscotch home, I was trying to take the static out of his fur, and I used a dryer sheet. But then I realized that the dryer sheet, the chemicals in it were irritating my hand, and I was like, oh no, will the chemicals hurt him? And I Googled it, and Reddit was like, you poisoned your dog, asshole! And so I was I gave him what I call a panic bath. I carried him into the shower and trapped him in there, and was scrubbing him off frantically while sobbing and apologizing, and he was not happy. He actually used his paw to force open the door at one point and ran out into the rest of the house. And then I called the vet to be like, what's a safe way I could take the static out of his fur? He gets so itchy. And the vet was immediately like, use a dryer sheet. And I'm like, wait, that won't poison him? And the vet's like, where are you getting this?
Yeah, so Reddit is not the best for reliability.
No. It's not an anything.
Yeah,
it's
who would have thought?
It's a great window into the brewing insanity in the human collective unconscious.
That's true.
Everyone's so mean on Reddit, too.
I know.
So mean.
There's a couple of subreddits that I go to that are, like, surprisingly good.
Yeah.
Like, they're full of decent people and occasionally get invaded by trolls or whatever. But, like, the vast majority of the ones that I creep on, because I'm not active in any of them, are just full of shit.
Yeah, so there's a reason that the Noctivigan account is banned on a couple subreddits.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so is ours.
Yeah, it happens.
I will say that the Tumblr user base, ever since Reddit had whatever weird blow up they had several months ago, we have been offering Reddit users asylum. Like, we have been granting citizenship to the Reddit refugees.
Yes, because Tumblr is also a healthy place.
No, it's not. We're just still a civilization.
Okay. We have... Before we get into Civ 6 Social Media Edition...
let's go into the housekeeping, I guess, right?
Yeah, housekeeping.
All right. Well, if you like what you heard, you can like and subscribe on whatever podcasting platform it is that you are listening to us on. And if it is Apple or Spotify, you can leave us a review. 5 stars preferred, but not required. And then, the usual stuff. If you want to shoot us an email, you can do that at noctivigantpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can reach out to us on Twitter at Noctivian Pod, or I am at Mix Rory Wicks.
I'm at Bearish Terror.
I'm at Midwest Undead.
And then we have a plethora of other social media platforms. We have an Instagram, Noctivian_podcast.
We have a Reddit account, Noctivian Podcast.
We have a Tumblr account, Noctivian Podcast.
And then we also have guests, the Quite Unusual Podcast, who yes. have social medias, I imagine.
Also, thank you for coming on. Yes, this was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. This was great.
Good.
I had a lot of fun.
Good. It's good to know we're still entertaining.
At least a little bit.
I laughed. I cried. I unlocked new fears.
Yeah. Good. I mean, how could you not be entertaining with a story of 74 hamsters?
It went free for the rest of my life.
74 hamsters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is a wild story.
Yeah. And it's one of those stories where every time I retell it, I come an inch closer to understanding my trauma.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's healing. You're healing.
Yes. But we are on all the social medias, every single one, unfortunately. And we're at Quite Unusual Pod. You can also email us at quiteunusualpod@gmail.com and find our podcast wherever you found this one.
Yeah.
All platforms.
Okay. But sure. I think that is it. So lead us out of here, Rory.
All right. Well, if there's nothing else, then good night, ghosties. Good night, ghoulies. Good night, moth people. Stay safe out there on those midnight roads.
Don't get lost.
You can get lost a little.
Follow the signposts.
Nah.
Oh. Or don't.
If you do get lost, Buffy will come and get you. It'll be okay.
Aww. Or the hamsters will, and then it will not be okay.
Run. Run.
God damn it, Nick. You ruined my beautiful moment.
I see a herd of hamsters running towards you. You run.
Yeah, I didn't think about the ghost hamsters in your heaven, though, Nick.
Yeah, so. I know. Can you imagine that? Like, I walk through the pearly gates, and then suddenly there's a high-pitched shriek, and I'm just buried under balls of angry fur.
Just St. Peter with a broom. Stop it! Stop it! We talked about this in family therapy. You're supposed to forgive him.
Just stabbing me with toothpicks.
I mean, you deserve it.
I don't know what I did or what I could have done better, but I'm sorry.
You were nine. It's literally not your fault. That's God's fault at that point.
Okay, I think we're done.
They're wearing like little leather jackets and like hitting chains on their hands.
they West Side Story, and I step through and they just start coming towards me in unison, snapping.
Snapping.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Wow.
I love it.